That's why it's clear space. That's why, you know, I always tell the story that Jimmy Ellis told to me of, which a number of you may have heard before me tell the story before, of Tyrone Guthrie after the war being asked to go to Poland to direct a production of Hamlet. It took him 3 or 4 days to get across Europe, and he finds himself eventually in Warsaw. And they bring him through the city, and the people are living in holes in the ground, and they're kind of building shelters for themselves still and cooking on the street. And they get into the main square, and there's a brand new theatre, and they open the door and they say, "There you are, Mr. Guthrie, there's your theatre." And he said, "But why did you why is your first act as a new country to government to build a theatre?" He said, "Well, look, Mr. Guthrie, the theatre is everybody's home." And it is everybody's home, and it does things like you're talking about, by making people re-look at and revise their attitudes over the years when they look at Sam's play. They give people their dignity back when you go and see the Observe the Sons of Ulster. You have a disenfranchised group of people, how they might feel disenfranchised, going and seeing their shared and collective history being celebrated on the stage in a dignified and heroic way. So therefore, those elements of their past are elevated for them, and they can come out feeling so much more good, you know, good about themselves and good about the community that they come from and the sacrifices they made. So the theatre is extremely important, I think, in those. It can heal, and it can enlighten, and it can provoke. But it's nobody owns the space. That's the point. Nobody owns the space. We can all come into it, and we all give our best of it when we're there, and it's there for the playwrights to kind of write and, you know, draw our attention to the issues. So I think that's a wonderful thing that happened to him. Admittedly, he's looking at it with a pretty wry eye over the years, and you know, it was a pretty disastrous campaign.
There were 25 of them there. And,
yes.
And one denominator, was looking back, and they, along with their colleagues, the friends, the Dublin veterans of the all served time over the years in the Royal Irish Rifles. John's identity is British, Mick's identity is same. Says we have that, but we've accepted that. Although I think the youngest of all of them was about 73. They would advocate, especially when they get the opportunity to speak to young people and not so young people, that our differences in the future, now and in the future, says has to go that way. And again, you mentioned Charabanc. Well, Brenda Winter Palmer's play now is up and won the medal in the drawer. And again, Catholic nationalists coming to the realization, or at least the tolerance, that they're looking back 100 years ago to their ancestors and why so many of them, tens of thousands, it says, enlisted and fought in the British Army. Again, another piece of relatively contemporary history that was buried for decades, and it's long overdue that says is able to stand on its own with the degree of tolerance and compassion, without all of the impediments that went before about even talking about it.
Yes, and which brings you us to the point of wondering why things like the Haas talks have broken down, and why we can't see why platforms like that aren't absolutely essential. You know, a lot of very brave people signed the Good Friday Agreement, and we all said yes to it. And it's there, and it has to be implemented. And part of the implementation of it, surely, is the recommendations of Haas, the Haas report, where we're going to put platforms like this together, and where we can talk share our experiences and give some closure to some to people who really, really need it by coming face to face with sometimes the perpetrators of the thing. So, you know, it's all part of the same thing as far as I can see. Theatre is part of the healing process, but also we need more platforms like this where we can speak about this stuff, where we recognise each other's point of view and the fact that there's, you know, we're all equal under the sun. So yeah, well, that's great that the theatre provoked that particular response.
Any other kind of further questions?
Are we going to hear the end of it? Are you going to read from the end of the
Stuart? I wish I had the play here, unfortunately. And Evelyn. Could you be a bit quicker the next time? So
it's not rehearsed?
No, certainly not rehearsed, but it's Marion's speech, of course. It's not the man's speech, it's the woman's speech. But I'll read it for you anyway. Lenny's been talking about they, this, they, that, they, the other, they did this, they did that. She goes, they. You think you can both shuffle it off so easily with your righteous anger? Let me tell you, you're not even in the same league as I am for righteous anger. I've supped on precious little else for the past 5 years. It changes nothing. Forget the church. Forget the priests and pastors. There is some kind of Christ in every one of us. Each of us either honours him or denies him and violates him. What we do to him is done to ourselves. I had a child once, she says. I called him Christopher because he was kind of Christ to me. He brought love with him, the truth and the life. He was a future until one day I found him dead. I thought like you for a long time. He chose death in the cot rather than life in this town. In these times, it was their fault. They had done it to me. I hated them. I hated life. It was all a lie, of course. The cause and the effect were in me and in him too. We were mortal after all. We were human. We had to be. We couldn't bear one another, couldn't tolerate ourselves. The child was only fallible mortal, the same as the rest of us. That was all he was telling us. I felt him as a raw scar across my own spirit, stinging me every minute, every hour, everything defaced by it, until I was blaming him for all the pain. He was one of them too. Then I denied him, the Christ in him, which he had entrusted to my care, the ghost of him that I still carry as I carried his little body, the Christ in him absorbed into the Christ in me. We have got to love that in ourselves first, and then in them. That's the only future there is. Personally, I want to live now. I want this house to live. We have committed sacrilege enough on life in this place, in these times. We don't just owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our dead too. Our innocent dead. They are not our masters. They're only our creditors for the life they never knew. We owe them that at least. The fullest life for which they could ever have hoped. We carry those ghosts within us. To betray those hopes is the real sin against the Christ. And I, for one, cannot commit it one day longer. Stuart Parker.
Good old Stuart, eh?
just draw things to close on that kind of Pentecostalist note. I mean, actually, how that kind of play finishes is also with the music playing a closer.
Oh yeah, that's right.
With the,
yeah,
with the trombone and the banjo playing. That hymn kind of blending and blurring in the blues is a really transcendental kind of ending of the play, as the windows opened and the light pours in, which is a suitable kind of ending for this. I have always kind of felt that actors are in many ways our greatest emissaries and some of our greatest kind of thinkers, especially if we're thinking things differently in this place and in these times. It's been a real kind of pleasure to have two of our greatest dramatists personally kind of here today. And if you could just tease out a thread from earlier on about working class kind of audiences and attendance at the theatre. Dennis Ireland, another great neglected kind of writer, he was called the White Blackbird. He was a Presbyterian Republican in Belfast in the 30s. He talked about how in the 1930s it was still a working class pursuit to go and see Shakespeare in the Opera House and in other theatres in this city in the 1930s. And he said that Belfast is notorious. If you could survive Glasgow and Belfast, you could survive anywhere. And it was a particularly notorious play for anybody, any hapless, usually English actor, who would arrive playing Hamlet, because in Belfast it was a tradition for the audiences from Carnegie and Durham Street and Sandy Road to shout out when Hamlet came onto the stage, "Hey Hamlet, where's your car?" See how the actor would cope with that. I always wanted to golder that out, and usually the actors would flap. So can I ask you to be a little bit less approbative, but please show your appreciation to both.